May it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Defender's Office of the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Earl Lippert. In this case, Mr. Lippert pled guilty to conspiracy to distribute and possess with intent to distribute at least 500 grams of methamphetamine, distributing methamphetamine to someone under the age of 21, manufacturing 1.4 grams of methamphetamine, and manufacturing 24.1 grams of methamphetamine. The government didn't file a 21 United States Code Section 851 notice in this case, and it didn't have any grounds to do so, which meant that Mr. Lippert's statutory range of imprisonment for counts 3 and 4, the manufacturing methamphetamine counts, was up to 20 years imprisonment. However, the probation officer, court, and defense counsel all somehow thought that a Section 851 notice had been filed, making the statutory range up to 30 years in prison. And the court sentenced Mr. Lippert accordingly to 30 years in prison each for both counts 3 and 4, which was obviously error. In Calvin Gray, this court did hold that sentencing a defendant above the statutory maximum for one or more counts was not plain error when the sentence didn't exceed the combined statutory maximum. However, Gray was decided before Booker, so that rule should no longer apply, since the court's view of the statutory maximum on each count is likely to influence the court's view of the seriousness of the offense and the history and characteristics of the defendant, and in this case may have slightly influenced the court to sentence Mr. Lippert to the guideline sentence of life, although certainly was leaning that way anyway. But we don't know if there was one thing that tipped the scales to that versus a long term of years, which would be the likely alternative.
We know precisely why the judge imposed life, because he explained it.
We know several of the reasons, yes. And
it fundamentally had to do with the abuse of the child.
That seemed to be the primary reason, yes. Like I said, whether that was, that may have been enough, but it's hard to say whether.
Judge Murphy says you're going to get life, you're going to die in federal prison, you're going to do it because you abused a minor child who in nature and had every reason to expect and believe that her dad would protect and nurture her. Not only was the father the instrument of abuse, even if this were not a guideline sentence, he would impose this sentence. I mean, this is pretty unequivocal.
It would seem that way, yes. And certainly he was going to give Mr. Lippert a very long sentence no matter what.
Forget the guidelines. The statute itself authorized me to give this man a life sentence. He's probably, on the one hand, I've done this he's acknowledging he does this in very few cases, but it's richly, richly deserved. I think he made himself really plain.
Is your objective simply to send this back on 3 and 4 just to correct an error and make it 20 years instead of 30 for the...
The court may decide that that's all it needs to do when it...
Well, what do you recommend?
Recommend letting the court decide whether or not this affected its sentence. If it didn't affect the sentence, then obviously the remedy would simply be to change the judgment order to reflect the 20-year sentence on counts 3 and 4. If it did affect the sentence, then the court should be free to hold a new sentencing hearing. Now, admittedly, based on what the court says, that's, you know, may not happen. And, of course, related to this, we've got the issue of the statutory ranges and guidelines ranges for the supervised release terms, which, because of the 851 error, well, thinking there was an 851 notice, the court thought that the supervised release term for count one, the conspiracy count, was at least 10 years supervised release, and sentenced Mr. Lippert accordingly. Also sentenced him to 6 years of supervised release for counts 3 and 4 without making any findings. However, the probation officer had said that that was the guidelines range based on his mistake about the 851 notice. correct guidelines ranges were 5 years of supervised release for count one and 3 years for counts three and four.
Be corrected by an amended judgment as opposed to a full resentencing, right?
If the court intended to apply the guidelines ranges, that could be, yes.
Mr. Anderson, do you have any information about the disposition of the state charges against Mr. Lippert?
I do not.
Okay.
So simply ask that the, based on these errors, the court remand Mr. Lippert's case for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Boyce.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Don Boyce, here today on behalf of the government. This is a case where the defendant was convicted of the conspiracy count, sentenced to life, and under the terms that the court's already gone over, where the district court made it very clear that that was going to be the sentence, regardless of the guidelines.
Mr. Boyce, how did this happen? These are pretty basic problems.
Mm-hmm. The 30-year sentence when there's a 20-year maximum, I agree,
yeah.
Judge. Somehow the probation officer got the idea that there was an 851 when there wasn't.
And the prosecutor didn't correct this idea somewhere along the way? You all review those PSRs, right?
We certainly do. Apparently the prosecutor didn't catch it either.
I mean, so nobody caught it here.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So I think that it's pretty clear that Judge Murphy would not be inclined to change his life sentence on count one. So really, I think sort of the worst-case scenario from the government's point of view would be just going back and correcting the statutory sentences on counts three and four and maybe having the court look at the supervised release, although that's probably irrelevant in a life sentence. Even that, I would suggest, may not be necessary because the defendant's claim may not survive the third and fourth prongs of the plain error review. The substantial right that's at issue would be not being sentenced to more time than the statute allows, which, of course, would be a substantial right. But that would only come into play if the defendant's life sentence were somehow vacated in the future or the defendant argues that he may be pardoned or something like that. That seems pretty tenuous from the government's point of view. The fourth prong talks about remanding when the integrity of the judicial proceeding is at issue. I would point to the Hernandez case that's cited in the government's brief on that prong. Basically, it says that when the sentence the court gave, the ultimate total sentence, would have been authorized despite the error that the integrity of the proceedings isn't affected, and that's basically what happened here. The defendant could have gotten the life sentence either way despite the errors that did occur. So that's the government's position. Are there any questions?
Apparently not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson, anything further? Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. Mr. Anderson, thank you for taking this case on behalf of your client. The case is taken under advisement and the